Blog Talk Radio.
Oh Lord, you have searched me, and you know me. You know when I sit, and when I rise, you perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out, and my lying down. You are familiar with all of my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, Lord. You know it completely. You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. And such knowledge, Lord, is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence, Lord? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on wings of the dawn, if I sail on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say surely the darkness will hide me, and the light become like nights all around me. Oh Lord, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, but darkness is as light to you. Created my inmost being, me together in my mother's womb. Oh, and I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your words are wonderful, I know that for well. If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on wings of the dawn, if I sail along the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. And my faith would not hear from you, Lord, when I was made in that secret place, when I was woven together, when I was woven together, in the depths of the earth, in the depths of the earth.
About is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of the sand, the grains of the sand. And when I awake, Lord, when I awake, Lord, I am still with you. I am still with you. I am still with you. I am still with you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another End Time News Report with the incomparable, the one and only Sister Marie and her sidekick. I happen to be the sidekick. I'm her Robin to her Batman. So We're a dynamic duo, but she takes the lead, and she gets 30 minutes of airtime, and I get 10 minutes. And that's the way it is. That's the way it is at home. That's the way it is on the broadcast. That's the way it is with Benji, my dog. That's it. I'm the sidekick now. I used to be the big shot, but now I'm just the sidekick. Have you ever seen the motorcycle with the little car where the midget gets into the little car, the sidecar? The Germans used to have those. The Germans invented those motorcycles. So Sister Marie's in the big motorcycle, and I'm the little midget. I'm not a midget. I'm 250 pounds. So can you imagine me trying to squeeze myself into that little miniature car that which is designed for a midget? That's me. That's where the sidekick goes. If we were in the African-American church, I would be Sister Marie's adjutant, or what they call armor bearer. I would be her armor bearer. Well, we have a great show in store for you today, as always, and it's dark and dreary and cold and raining. I love Thursdays. In fact, I was born on a Thursday. I was born the Thursday before Mother's Day. I was born May 7th, 1959. If you go back, if you go all the way back and find yourself a calendar on 1959, and you look up May 7th, that was a Thursday. That following Sunday was Mother's Day. I made Mama a mama. So, my brothers and sisters, I love Thursdays. I love Thursdays. That's my favorite day of the week, Thursdays. And not because I was born on a Thursday, I've always loved Thursdays. And I love the fall. And as I look out my window here, all the leaves are coming down, and they're orange and yellow and green. It's a beautiful foliage. But it's dark and dreary. And it is what it is, but I'm in studio here, and we're set to go. What a wonderful show. So let me bring on Batman. And Sister Marie, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Girl Mo. How are you?
Well, the rat is running circles around me again. And now you can ask my wife. I have basically moved everything out of the attic. He's kicked me out of the attic. And now I have all the supplies in another room, and my wife is telling me to get it out of here, but if I put it back in there, he's going to destroy it. So the whole attic is full of traps, and my son and I, we check them every hour on the hour, and there's nothing. So Elmer Fudd and Elmer Fudd Jr., and we've caught nothing. So... I'm being outwitted by a creature who is wickedly smart. Wickedly
exactly.
Smart. So,
that's amazing.
It is what it
Can't
is.
Can't get your mouth.
I'm telling you. It's amazing. So, how are you doing? You're doing well?
Yeah, just resting up from my vacation.
Yeah, and how was that? How was that vacation?
It was good. It was a long trip. I think we did 4,330 miles.
Oh, my goodness.
That's my husband.
Wow.
That's his idea of a vacation. You know.
Well, in two weeks, that's not bad. Now, from where I'm at to Key West, Florida, right, which is the southernmost part of the state of Florida, Key West. If you go all the way down to Key West, there's this bell made out of cement, and it tells you this is the southernmost point of the United States. So from my house, from where I'm at to Key West, Florida, it would be like 1,700 miles.
Right.
So you did that two times plus.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. I think
Which
it was
crazy.
Like 1,750 going out there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
to
sure.
where we were at. It was somewhere around there. And, of course, we did a lot of traveling
sure.
every day when we were there.
Sure.
So
right.
we managed to get up into Yellowstone for a day in an area we haven't been that's always closed in the southern part.
Right.
So we drove, you know, as far as we could. We ended up on the tip of Montana again. And then we were close to Idaho, so we went through a pass over to Idaho,
mm-hmm.
too. So we, yeah, we did some traveling, I'm telling you. And I come back and I was, like, so tired, and I couldn't think. You know how you are when you're really tired? It's like,
sure.
do we remember this? I don't know. You know, so all week, my husband had another week off. So we're like, okay, who can think today? We need to do this. Neither
right,
one of us
right.
can think very well. And I think it's just, you know, resting now. Relaxing
sure, sure.
after, you know, run. So,
sure.
By the way,
sure.
that motorcycle is called the Side Hack. It used to be called the Side Hack. On
the
side of that.
What?
Hack. They used to call it a
side hack. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where
well,
I'm from.
It's
anyway.
Tight in there. I'm telling you, it's tight. That little thing is tight. So, but
you're
but
an adjutant,
you're a side,
all right.
But if you're a sidekick, that's where you sit. If you're a sidekick.
Oh boy. My oh boy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have
so
a great
been
show
interesting.
For today.
Well, I hope
what
so.
Was
I've
that?
Had this show for about 3 weeks. I'm looking for my notes, and it's like, do I have notes on this? No, I don't. You know, I had about 3 weeks ago, I had this show ready. So a lot
right.
of it's older news, but it's still, you know, we can learn something from it. Yesterday, I spent all day studying history, you know.
Okay.
And I found some amazing things that match exactly what's going on today and how it was like, this is like all planned out. So I thought about doing that, but I scrapped it because it takes too much thought
mm-hmm.
to get into it. There's a lot to it. And the lady that was talking about this, I don't agree with her theology, you know, but she has so many good historical things, you know, that are correct because, you know,
right.
I'm a history buff. So
right.
I spent most of the day yesterday listening to her and saying, you know, she's right. She's right. She's absolutely right on here. So all this can be connected. And it's easier than I thought, you know, when you look back at what has happened before, nothing new under
mm-hmm.
the sun.
Right.
So it's just amazing. So we were going to do that, but then I thought, you know, I was going to get into the new one and I thought, no, we need to knock this one off, you know, and just get
mm-hmm.
into a few things because there are people today that we're going to hear about. That are relevant today, you
okay.
know? So, and of course we're talking about symbolism and that's the idea that things represent other things. Basically, that's what it is, you know?
Right.
It's used to convey a message without saying it outright. And secret societies, other things like that, that's the kind of language they use, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They convey messages through symbolism and things like that. So we're going to finish up here. And I know it's old that the queen has died and, you know, Charles is right in there now. But there's a few things that happened during the funeral that can be explained in a different way than the way they presented it, you know. So
mm-hmm.
to the public, there's a different meaning
right.
behind it. So... that's what we're going to do today.
Well, sounds good to me.
Okay. So we can start with audio one, and this is false idol worship. This is important today because, you know, we're setting up idols with people, and we need to stop that. So we're going to finish what we didn't finish a few weeks ago. And Hugo in here, we're going to listen to Hugo. I haven't heard his latest videos, but this was one he put out back then. And he's trying to use his apologetic skills in here. And that was interesting because I would think he's like a new Christian. Maybe he's been a Christian for a while. But as you heard with him, he, you know, with everything going on, I think he's had a change of heart, you know, and he started digging through the Bible. This is what I heard and what he's been saying.
Right, right.
What do you think?
Well, I want to hear the man, and then I'll figure
out.
We'll see. Yeah, well, you know, I always like to hear the person to see their body language and what they actually say, and, you know, because there's a lot of people professing to be Christians, and then when you hear them, you say, no, he's not a Christian.
Yeah.
Well,
he has a little problem with his swearing, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, he still has a problem with that, but like we said, sanctification, it's a long process. It's
absolutely,
it's, you know. And I wanted to say something that I didn't get a chance to tell you that I think is important. You were talking about, I ask you a question, and you know what I ask you about someone who wanted some answers. And you told me something, and that stuck with me. And it was such, it was so relevant to what we see when we're trying to deal with other people, with other religions, and, you know, salvation issues and things like that. One of the things you said, it's like, and I thought about that whole trip, because I hadn't thought about it before. When you're leading someone to the Lord, it is like fishing. You know, we're fishers of men, right? That's what Jesus said. And I was watching like the fly fishermen because that's a lot out west. That's what they do. That's what Montana's known for, you know, parts of Montana. But I was watching them. I was watching people fish. And I thought, you know, you're exactly right. And you said if you throw the line out and you reel it in too fast, you know, you lose the fish.
Yeah.
You
lose
it.
Right.
But if you throw the line out and you let it set and put the bait out there, they'll come to it. You know, something to that effect.
Yeah.
That stuck with me, bro. That really did. So I had an opportunity to talk to someone. I thought, oh, I must have blew it. But I found out I didn't. You know, I explained different things about redemption, you know, judgment, redemption, things like that. Someone asked me that question. And I thought, you know, geez, I threw that out there. But I kept that in the back of my mind. You know, I didn't give too much. Like you said, don't throw out too much theology. Don't, you know, confuse the person, because this person's Catholic, by the way, Roman Catholic.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it was received, bro. It was
received. Wonderful.
And there's more questions coming, but I thought it was fantastic the way you presented that. And I want to encourage people to really think about that when you're witnessing to someone. You know, that was important. Of all the things you say and all the things you talk about, just something was the right word. Something like that was the right word at the right time. That's exactly what I needed to hear. So I started to focus on people who were fishing, and I watched and I concentrated, you know. And I know it sounds, it's so simple, isn't it? It's just a simple thing that you said, but it stuck with me. And I can see through that mistakes we've made in the past when witnessing to someone. We want to give them the book of Revelation or something, you know, when we see them, you know. Christ is going to return, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And we want to throw everything at them. But you are right, exactly right in what you said. And I want to thank you for that. Well, I have the opportunity. Thank you for that. That was a timely word right when I needed it.
Amen.
So I wanted to bring that out. And what you said, I mean, it really makes sense. And I know it's just so simple. It's
mm-hmm.
simple, but it was in my mind, and that's exactly the way I approached it. And, you know, it was received.
Amen.
Gratefully
Amen.
Received. So,
Amen.
Okay, we're going to start with audio one, and this is false idol worship. So, you know, we're going to see if Hugo here is using any sort of apologetic. I don't know
okay.
how much you can use as a new Christian, but we'll see.
Right.
And this, you know, something he mentions in here, I believe it's this one, he's mentioning bowing. Well, bowing is worship. Now, Nebuchadnezzar
right.
required people to bow down before him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something we shouldn't do. We've seen that with BLM, you know. I felt at the time that they were prepping people, you know, for bowing
right.
to another person. And that's always bothered me, you know. So we'll see what Hugo has to say.
Well,
okay.
you know, the Bible says concerning Jesus, every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that he's Lord. So notice,
correct.
Every knee shall bow, right? So bowing is part of that body language that tells you you're in a posture of worship.
Yes, exactly.
And this is why you shouldn't be bowing before the Pope or be bowing before your bishop and licking boots and doing any of those sort of things.
Right.
So
before the Queen
yeah.
even.
Exactly.
You know, I mean,
exactly.
you don't bow. Everyone bows. You have to bow. I said, well, you know, she was at a flower show. Across. We were, I forget exactly where we were, but there was a flower show going on across the street that she attends. My husband said,
right.
do you want to go? I said, no, I'm not bowing before anyone.
Right.
You know, do you want to go
sure.
over there? I said, I won't bow. So
absolutely.
Forget it.
Because that's
I wouldn't
part
cross
of, that's
the street
part
to meet her.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
you know.
Yeah, if you didn't cross the street,
yeah,
why are you going to cross the Atlantic?
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yep.
All right. Here's the audio.
Hello, you're listening to Hugo Talks. Thou shalt not worship false idols. You've heard of that saying before. That saying, it originates from the Bible. It's mentioned a few times in there. And what we are seeing now, over the last couple of days, with the Queen and a recent death and these queues of people, and this bowing and people getting down on their knees, is very much looking like that. I mean, since the Queen has been lying in the coffin, lying in state, where the public can come and walk past her, I mean, if you watch it on the live stream, watching it for a while last night, it's a curious thing to behold, seeing these people getting upset, crying, and nearly everyone bowing their head and getting down to their knees, some of them. I mean, the bowing of the head is very much a sign of worship, as well as respect. It states here that people can visit day and night, and it says here that the queue is nearly now 5 miles long, with an estimated waiting time of 8 hours? Is this for real? Come on. Here's a clip of the queue, okay? It says here that officials expect there to be possibly 750,000 people to view the coffin. Now, if that is true, and we have to bear in mind, whatever these people say, you shouldn't trust it, as they love to exaggerate things. What was it in Scotland? They reckon there was 33,000 people who viewed the coffin. Of course it would be 33,000. Always got to be 33. And even if we were to believe those numbers, it's still the minority in a country of 67 million population. I mean, what's the percentage? What's that, 2% of the population? I mean, what we are seeing are the monarchists, the people who watch too much television, those easily influenced and manipulated by emotional propaganda, those who follow the crowd. It is quite the sight, though, to see so many people crying, upset, bowing their heads to someone they never knew, probably never met. One of the biggest one of the biggest landowners in the world, entire life surrounded by riches beyond belief, living in palaces and castles, waited on by servants 24/7, all the time continuously taking money from the poor, from those 67 million people in the UK. As I said in the video, the mother of all psyops has begun. They have brainwashed these people into thinking they have given you some kind of service, but it's you who serves them. And this bowing, people putting their hands together as to pray and bow, people crossing themselves, is both fascinating to watch and also kind of depressing. It's not even like you can see anything. I mean, is there even a body in there? I mean, who knows? I would query that. But this bowing, crossing yourself, the queuing for hours, this is pretty much idolatry. Idolatry is the worship of a cult image or idol, as though it were God. The extreme admiration, love, or reverence for something or someone. And of course the fake stream media are amplifying this as much as possible because they want you to worship their false idol. With their wall-to-wall coverage, the images of the Queen everywhere, in towns, on billboards. Now the reality is, everything the Queen and the establishment stand for is the exact opposite of what Jesus stood for, okay? One simple example would be this. In the Gospels, Jesus would spend a considerable amount of time among the poor, serving them, encouraging them, and even standing up for them. The royal family don't do this. They are the opposite. They take from the poor and live in palaces surrounded by infinite riches, never giving any assistance to the poor, instead taking taxes from everyone, money they don't need, money that the poor actually need. Jesus said, there will always be poor people in the land. Therefore, I command you to be open-handed toward your brothers and toward the poor and needy in your land. And yet, like I said, the royal family don't give to the poor. They are hoarders, hoarders of money and land and objects. Much of the royal family's riches stem from their colonial past, stealing and looting, taking what was not theirs by extreme force, a history of violent atrocities. It's the opposite of what you should be bowing your head to worship.
Yeah, it's amazing how, and this is just one, he's very entertaining, I got to tell you, very funny. The same media, the same, you got CNN, MSNBC, all those radical stations.
Mm-hmm.
The same people who are promoting wokeness here, right? Like,
right.
They're trying to teach white people in America, you're bad. You got to loathe yourself. You got to hate yourself, right? Now, that's all these channels. White man bad.
Right.
White woman bad. They're responsible for your plight. They messed you up. You can't trace and you can't find where anybody messed you up, but that's the story. That's the narrative, right?
That's some narrative.
Now,
yeah.
Those,
yep.
Right. The same stations that are promoting white people in America bad spent 2 weeks covering the Queen and giving her praise.
Yes, exactly. That's a good point.
Right? Now,
yep.
who, like Hugo was just saying, where did these people get their money?
Yes, from the people.
Didn't they jack up India for years?
Mm-hmm.
They had control of India. Didn't the British
yep.
have control of Hong Kong? Correct me if I'm wrong,
yep.
but the Brits owned
I believe
Hong Kong
so, yes.
until recently.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
They owned that.
Yes.
They owned
Canada.
That. I mean, they, right. Right.
Yep.
So now, like Hugo says, they don't help anybody. They've been taken from people. But then
mm-hmm.
they tell you, the Queen has served for 80, whatever, how many years she served. She served, she was a, 70 years, whatever. She didn't serve
mm-hmm.
anybody.
No. She was waited
on. The people have been
on.
Serving her. Right. Exactly.
Yep.
This crazy talk. But
yep.
The people drink it, you know, like when they say, come and get the bishop's anointing. I'm the anointed one. No, you have nothing.
Right.
You don't. You,
right.
You're an apostate person. You have no anointing. And it,
right.
This is crazy. This is the craziness that these people promote. Right? I mean, and,
yes.
and look at how many people believe it. They believe the crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's the whole point, isn't it, with this idol worship, worshiping these monarchs and things like that. You know, it's crazy because the common people can hardly afford food and gas and things like that. And you know what I'm saying? The working man. And,
right.
And I'll tell you something. I learned a lot of things. You know, I observe things when we travel.
Right.
Don't miss a lot. And one of the things I noticed where we were staying, the hotel where we were staying at, the entire hotel was all managed, ran everything by Hispanics. The entire hotel. This is in the middle of, this is in Jackson, Wyoming, okay?
Right.
The other hotels in the area are all maintained, you know, right from the desk clerk, right on through the cleaners, everything, all run by Hispanics. Well, I went to Albertson's, the grocery store, to get some food. I went over there, and the entire place, and it was a huge, huge store, was all Hispanic, everyone. And I thought, you know, and they didn't speak English, bro, because I asked where the butter was. They said, sorry, no. I'm like, okay. All right, I'll find it. But the thing is because there were so many jobs and people said, you know what, I think, you know, this is great. The government's, you know, with all these checks they were handing out,
sure.
Stay at home, COVID.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they brought
right.
the Hispanics in, and they're hard workers. They're the hardest workers.
Sure.
You can imagine. They have taken all the jobs. Those jobs are gone.
Yeah.
Those jobs are
sure.
gone. That entire place. Now, think about it. Jackson, Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the hotel jobs, all the, you know, and that's all they have there.
Yep.
Hotels, the restaurants, they've all been taken over. And, you know, the jobs are gone. You don't see signs advertising for jobs. And then we saw a Target that was advertising at a starting pay for $34 an hour. And I thought, they couldn't find an American that would take a job for 34 to 37. I was 34 to 37. That's the starting pay.
That's crazy.
Think about that. That's crazy.
That's crazy. Sure. Sure.
So you have to, you know, think about what America has. We've become lazy. And I'm not saying that individually, that we're lazy
right,
people. I'm
right.
not saying that. But why we were putting our feet under the table or putting our feet up, our jobs are gone. They're going fast.
Sure.
And I think that's
sure.
why they're bringing, one of the reasons they're bringing in, allowing, you know, the borders to just open up. That's to fill jobs. I know it's true out west. So what happens when you want your job back? It's gone.
Well, there are no jobs.
You think they're going to? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because, you know, Biden keeps saying, if you are, you know, if you're a painter, we're going to show you how to make computer chips. No. And that's why they don't want to work stocking shelves, because they believe the lie that they're going to be taught how to make computer chips.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And like you said, they're all going to be in a world of hurt because they're going to find out that these people work and you lazy. That's it.
Yeah, because, you know, the tourists were all either the whites, the blacks, the Asians. They were all the tourists coming in on tourist buses.
Sure.
You know? And who was working? The Hispanics. They were working. So there wasn't hardly a place in that whole town that hasn't been filled with Hispanic.
There you go.
You know, the entire place. And I thought, you know what? There's a town that, you know, and not even speaking English. They still got the job.
And I bet you none of those people are paying taxes.
Yeah.
I bet
exactly.
You.
Exactly.
I bet you. Because no sorry doesn't know how to fill out a tax form, and no sorry doesn't care about a Social Security card. No sorry just wants the cash. And when the whole system comes tumbling down, we are going to be in a world of hurt.
Yes.
See?
Yep.
See, that's the issue here. That's the issue.
It is. So. The jobs are going to be gone. They're filling jobs with the people, you know, that are coming in illegally. They're putting them in the job market and taking over all the jobs. And, like you said, voting. How's that going to affect voting?
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
Our governor is running on the fact that she was tired. We were out of chips, computer chips for cars. That's our state, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's all run by the big auto companies. They're the ones that keep this state going. And she said, you know, we're going to make them here. And we're not going to let that happen. Again, that's how she's running. My husband's off 3 weeks because of computer chips. Again, lack of computer chips. Yet she's out there saying, we brought these computer chips. You know, we're going to make them right in Detroit. Well,
I'm sure she is.
Yeah.
And the first one that they make, they need to install it in her brain so she can start functioning. Because she doesn't have a, she's missing a chip. Okay? She's missing a chip.
Don't even go there. What she's running on is crazy. She's running on the fact that Michigan is hurting the women by not having abortion.
Absolutely.
Allowing abortions. She said, we're hurting Michigan women. How dare us?
Sure.
Nothing about the children.
Absolutely.
But we're hurting the women.
Yeah. Sure. No doubt.
But something's, you know, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is crazy, bro,
absolutely,
when you think about it. But,
absolutely,
you know,
it's crazy. Listen, they're saying, listen, we're upset because Michigan doesn't allow you to murder your child. We're so upset about that. See, they are the no crime. They are the for crime, political group.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go to the street, they're mugging you. They're shooting you. They're hitting you over the head by a 2x4. They're cracking your head open with a brick. They're throwing you in front of subways. And then, to boot, you can kill your baby and that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Because killing, listen, let me tell you something. Let's just say, if a state trooper saw you killing a calf, guess what's going to happen? Handcuffs.
Yep.
That's a baby cow. You can't do that
that's
to a
right.
baby. What? Handcuffs. But yeah, you can kill your baby.
Yeah.
Explain that to me. Explain it.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right.
Well,
here
I thought I'd mention that because I noticed all that, and I thought, guess what? Jobs are gone. You'll not find a job out there, you know, and this is going to happen in every town. So, good luck.
Sure. Yep.
I would query that, but this bowing, crossing yourself, the queuing for hours, this is pretty much idolatry. Idolatry is the worship of a cult image or idol, as though it were God. The extreme admiration, love, or reverence for something or someone. And of course, the mainstream media are amplifying this as much as possible because they want you to worship their false idol. With their water wall coverage, the images of the Queen everywhere, in towns, on billboards. Now, the reality is, everything the Queen and the establishment stand for is the exact opposite of what Jesus stood for, okay? One simple example would be this. In the Gospels, Jesus would spend a considerable amount of time among the poor, serving them, encouraging them, and even standing up for them. The royal family don't do this. They are the opposite. They take from the poor and live in palaces surrounded by infinite riches, never giving any assistance to the poor, instead taking taxes from everyone. Money they don't need. Money that the poor actually need. Jesus said, there will always be poor people in the land. Therefore, I command you to be open-handed toward your brothers and toward the poor and needy in your land. And yet, like I said, the royal family don't give to the poor. They are hoarders, hoarders of money and land and objects. Much of the royal family's riches stem from their colonial past, stealing and looting, taking what was not theirs by extreme force, a history of violent atrocities. It's the opposite of what you should be bowing your head to worship. How much is the Queen's funeral going to cost? Well, it says here they don't know yet. Estimates are at around 9 million. I would say it's going to be far more. But guess who is paying for it? Yes, the public. You're paying for it. The royal family won't be paying for it, although they could easily afford to pay for it, but they won't. No, they want you to pay for it. Who's going to pay for your mum's funeral or your granddad's funeral? Ah, that's going to be you, isn't it? Do you think the royal family will help you out with your funeral expenses? No. No, they're not. But carry on believing and thanking them for their service to you. And all of these people are bowing down and worshipping this person. It's in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. Well, you're bowing down and serving them. Man commits idolatry whenever he honors and reveres a creature in place of God, whether this be gods or demons, power, pleasure, race, ancestors, the state, money. That's what it says here. So look, the world, right, at this time is mostly secular, right? Yet people, I feel, whether they like it or not, people are intuitively searching for something, intuitively spiritual. I think it's innate in everyone. One of the reasons paranormal shows, for instance, are so popular is because people, you know, they gravitate towards the mysteries of the unseen because people want to believe in something else out there. They're always looking for something. Yet the environment we live in is always pushing you away from the spiritual and getting you to focus on the science, yeah? It's all trust the science, trust in technology. And then because of this, people have a spiritual hole in them that leaves them feeling empty, yeah? And in situations such as this, where the media can manipulate the public emotionally, they then want to try and fill that spiritual hole, but they send you the wrong way and get you to worship a false idol, worshipping the exact opposite of what you should be looking up to. I mean, for example, worshipping a false idol, why is it wrong? Well, like I said, people are intuitively looking for something to give them meaning, to give them hope, happiness. But instead of looking for that from the Creator, from God, they are looking to get it from someone. And in this case, the Queen, the head of state, the royal family. They are looking to get it from someone, something that stands for greed, power, hoarding riches, stealing, selfishness and worse. They are coercing people to put their energy into that. People are idolizing that and expecting to get something in return. You won't like what you get in return. You're going to end up reaping what you sow. Another thing people look from idols is control and security, especially in times that are chaotic and unpredictable. But there is no security coming back from the establishment. The royal family give you nothing. All they do is take. So again, it's a one-way exchange. They take not only your money, but also are vampirically sapping your energy, your spiritual energy, especially if you're worshipping this false idol. And that, of course, then leaves you empty and leaves you insecure as opposed to secure. You get the opposite of what you were looking for because you're looking for it in the complete wrong place. In the last couple of years, these people, yeah, the government, the establishment, the royal family have told you to trust the science. They may as well just say, worship the science. This has been their mantra. As I said, people are always going to worship. It's innate within us. But there are those that will attempt to drive those intrinsic emotions that we all have. They will attempt to drive you towards false channels. Over the last 2 years, the media establishment have got people queuing up on many occasions over the last 2 years and got people worshipping the God of science. And how's that working out for you? Did that result in people feeling more secure and having more control? I think not. Now, I know there's a lot of you out there that don't believe in this, but let's just say God created you. You are a creation of God. And the Ten Commandments are real. And one of them, Ten Commandments, is to not worship false idols. And that you're supposed to worship your Creator, God. Okay? And that commandment is effectively, it's a guideline. It's advice for you to follow. You don't have to. It's a guideline. And if you follow it, it should stop you from ending up falling into a trap and feeling miserable and hopeless. And if things are created for a purpose, if you're created for a purpose, then you don't follow these guidelines and you end up using what you have for the wrong purpose, yeah? I mean, it's a bit like if you use a hammer to play the violin, you're using the wrong thing for the wrong purpose and you end up, what are you going to do? You're going to break it. The hammer is for hitting nails and you're supposed to use a bow for the violin. Everything has its purpose, and if you use the wrong thing for the wrong purpose, it will end up not working or broken. So could that be the same here in regards to worshipping false idols? So when I look at these people queuing up and bowing their heads, it seems to me they are looking for something but don't quite know what it is. They are being influenced and directed to channeling their spiritual energy into the very opposite of where it's supposed to go. Okay? Let us know what you think in the comments, as always.
I'm convinced he's Christian.
Yes, me too. I think he's doing pretty good.
Yeah,
I think
for
he's
a
doing
new believer.
Really good.
For a new believer, yeah, he's you know.
He could have been a believer of what he said in the beginning, because you know what it's like over there. You know, you
right.
have to be selective, you know, with your speech.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he doesn't care now, but because he's had so many channels. You know,
sure,
he just,
sure.
Hugo talks again, Hugo talks more, you
right.
know. So, you know, it was interesting. You were talking about the media. And someone in England, I listened to this yesterday too, called it's a crisis actors, you know, and this is, he's, you know, doing something on crisis actors being involved with media. And he actually called the number and pretended that he wanted to hire some. And he called, and I think it was could have been in Liverpool. He called to find out the information about hiring some crisis actors and just to get information. And she gave him everything until she realized what was going on. And they actually hire out people. He said, well, what kind of work do you do? Who do you hire out to? And they said, oh, you know, for medical, doctors, things like that in a crisis. You know, we hire them out. It's like 400 pounds, you know, a day for a crisis actor. We're connected to people like organizations that have amputees. You know, we can bring those in. Isn't that amazing? So
yeah.
A lot of times when we see a crisis, you know, on the news, those could be crisis actors.
Yeah.
It could be the same thing, you know, and they go straight to them usually. And she just spilled the whole thing. But then when he started to get in depth with the questions, she realized something was wrong and got him off the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I can
mm-hmm.
give you that clip. It's amazing.
Yeah, please.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
so.
Yeah.
And this guy is not a Christian by any means. This
mm-hmm.
guy is not a Christian, but he is interested in all this and what's going on with the actors, you know, the crisis
mm-hmm.
actors and stuff. That's
yeah,
kind of
yeah.
his forte, you know, in this deception. So,
amazing.
Yeah, I'll
amazing.
Send you that. But he actually got an interview, you know, talking to her, and he just, you know, can you get me 500? What if I needed 500? Oh, yeah, we can do that.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
Amazing.
Sure.
It's amazing.
Sure.
So, okay, audio two, ceremonial magic. This is an audio explaining the breaking of the wand ceremony at the funeral. If you
okay.
notice, there was a guy that broke the wand. I don't know if you watched, you know,
no,
any
I
of
didn't
the funeral.
Watch. Mm-mm.
But he breaks a wand and slides both pieces next to, like, her crown or under the pillow or whatever she had on top of it. And when someone asked about that in the news, they were told that it means the end of this man's service to the queen. You know, that was his
right.
job to serve her,
mm-hmm,
her
mm-hmm.
footman or whatever.
Right.
And that's what they were told, but that's not true. So Hugo's going to explain the real meaning behind this, the breaking of the wand.
All righty.
So I found it interesting. I learned something new from Hugo on this.
Sure.
So
sure.
if you
All
want
right.
to play
Here
that,
it is.
We can.
Hello, you're listening to Hugo Talks. Okay, I just wanted to talk about a key moment in the ceremony yesterday. I've been talking about Luciferianism, witchcraft, Freemasonry, and pretty much all of these organizations, they are attempting to control and manipulate the public. Yesterday's events was chock-a-block full of symbolism. Here we see the coffin on a black and white checkerboard floor and an inverted cross. An inverted cross on a Masonic floor. Of course, it depends on what perspective you're looking at it from. Yet, this is the perspective that was deliberately shown on TV on many occasions yesterday for the masses to look at. Anyway, this is not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about this scene. Okay, so what you're seeing there is the Lord Chamberlain, okay, breaking his wand, a wand given to him from the Queen, breaking the wand, and that wand then going down with the coffin, okay? Now notice it's not called a stick, it's not called a staff even, it's called a wand. What is the definition of a wand? The primary definition it says here is a slender stick or rod, especially one used by a magician, a conjurer, or a diviner. Yeah, that's a usual association. It's associated with magic, like in magic shows with magicians, but it's also associated with witchcraft, okay? It's associated with ceremonial magic. Remember in earlier videos I talked about the Order of the Golden Dawn and how they use a lotus wand, as you can see here. And there are details of how to use it for invocation. how it can be used for white magic and black magic. Now, I know people will say, come on, man, it's only tradition. It's nothing. It's just a silly thing they do. Really? Well, the Queen was initiated into a Druid ceremony way back. In fact, I believe Seven Grains of Salt, the YouTube channel, did a video on this yesterday, which is worth checking out. Here is a clip, you've probably seen it before, that has been around on the internet for a long time. So, Druids, we've talked about them here before, recently, and the connection they had to the demonic sigil that was at the Lost Gardens of Heligan. All of these things are connected. Interestingly, you can see that this breaking of the wand is mentioned here in regards to magicians, like Harry Houdini. Here we see the broken wand ceremony. There isn't much about this online, but it says here, a broken wand ceremony is a ritual performed at or shortly before the funeral of a magician, in which a wand, either the wand which the magician used in performances or a ceremonial one, is broken, indicating that with the magician's death, the wand has lost its magic. This was notably done by Harry Houdini at his funeral in 1926. Of course, Harry Houdini was also a Freemason. He was initiated into the St. Cecil Lodge in New York in 1923. I mean, you even have a Masonic Lodge for magicians called the Invisible Lodge. Here are some of those magicians from that lodge talking about breaking the wand.
This date, in 1926, the ritual of the broken wand for Harry Houdini. He was born Eric Weiss on March 24, 1874, in Budapest, Hungary. He died on October 31st, Halloween Day, 1926, in Detroit, Michigan. 89 years later, we fondly remember the man whose name means magic. The greatest tribute to anyone is to say you live on in the minds and hearts of relatives, friends, and admirers. And so we keep the flame burning and the memory alive for Houdini. He touched us with his unique style, so we as magicians may touch others with the wonders and mysteries of magic as a performing art. When Houdini was initiated into the Society of American Magicians, he was presented with a special wand, the ancient emblem of mystery and power. This tradition continues today as a welcome to all new members of the SAM. The wand is a symbol of the conjurer's knowledge of the secrets of magic and the ability to perform those miracles. But when a magician dies, the wand has no further meaning and no authority. It becomes just a piece of wood. The spell is broken.
Did you notice the symbol on the back of the book he was reading? Similar to the Lost Gardens of Heligan demon sigil for Azazel. Also similar to the Freemason symbol as well. Check my other videos about that. But yeah, they said the spell is broken. I'd imagine now that another ceremony will be done to imbue a new wand with their new master. Here we see this new initiated guide to Freemasonry. As you can see, wands are used all the time. Here we see the wands of office. It says here the director of ceremonies and his assistant and senior and junior deacons each have a wand of office. The DC and his assistant will always carry their wands when moving about the lodge. The deacons, depending on the ritual, may carry theirs. This is Freemasonic, okay? It's Luciferian. It's the worshipping of Lucifer. It's witchcraft. It is all of these things. So what you were watching yesterday, if you bothered to watch it, was a massive Freemasonic ceremony. And for the first time, they showed the breaking of the wand over the coffin of a monarch. This is all linked to Wicca, ceremonial magic. All of these secret societies are secret for a reason. They are practicing stuff they don't want the public to know about. The mainstream fake stream media have put up numerous articles trying to explain what this ritual of breaking the wand was about. Here we see, what is the wand of office and why will it be broken for the Queen? But none of these articles explain why it's called a wand. They just say it's tradition. They don't even explain why it was broken, really. something about how the Lord Chamberlain used to use the wand to chastise people, hit them or something? Very odd. No real reason explained. So numerous fake stream media articles that don't really explain anything, but I believe they just felt they needed to put something out because obviously people are going to ask questions. Well, it's ceremonial magic, Wicca, Druid, Freemasonic rituals, witchcraft. Now, the Lord Chamberlain, who broke the wand, that's not his name, that's his title. The Lord Chamberlain, he runs the royal household, it says here, the most senior member of the royal household, and is responsible for overseeing all departments, staff, and interacting with the government, House of Commons, etc. Now, this guy, who is the Lord Chamberlain, his real name is Andrew Parker. Now, he used to be the Director General of MI5, which is the security service, and is also part of MI6, the Secret Intelligence Service, yeah, the Secret Service. And this guy is the guy that broke the wand. Kind of reminds me of Her Majesty's Secret Service and John Dee, who was the court astronomer for and also political advisor to Queen Elizabeth I. They say he was the original 007 because he signed his name 007 to designate letters for the Queen's eyes only, and that he was the head of the Royal Secret Service back in 1558 when he became her first court magician. He was the first to use the term British Empire and spent most of his time trying to contact spirits, angels and demons through crystal balls by using scrying. He even wrote a guidebook to summoning angels and demons in 1582. There's loads of information on him if you want to check it out. These days, the scrying is being done by everyone with their black mirror devices. This was an early version of the Secret Service, of which we now call MI5 or MI6, which, of course, the guy who broke the wand in the ceremony yesterday was director of for 7 years. So the point is, there is nothing new under the sun. These institutions and their illusions of grandeur and power are steeped in Luciferianism and witchcraft, whether it's the royal family or the United Nations and the Lucis Trust, formerly called Lucifer Publishing because they worship Lucifer and openly state they do worldwide invocations, worldwide spells for the United Nations and the World Economic Forum. I mean, look at the World Health Organization logo, a staff, or is it a wand with a snake wrapped around it? It's everywhere, which I've documented in past videos. It could be sigils placed in historic gardens or big tech companies. It's everywhere. Yet people refuse to see it. It's right in front of your face. Yet people say, oh, it's just a silly tradition. It's just nothing. Don't be silly, they'll say. The only reason I can think they are blind to this is because they themselves are under a spell. They are spellbound. As always, thanks for listening. Come and subscribe to HugoTalks.com, my website where you can be notified from source of all videos I upload, and I don't have to rely on third-party platforms to get the word out.
Very interesting stuff there on that one thing.
Yes, yes. I learned something new there.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
You know, we always learn something new. That was new to me, and I thought it was odd when I watched it, but then the news person said, no, that's the end of his service. You know, that's what that means. It's just the end of his service. You know, he's seen the wand, and I thought, well, there's got to be more behind that, and sure enough, Hugo comes up with this, and I thought, yep, he's right, you know? That's interesting about Houdini, because Houdini was Jewish and also Masonic.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yep.
I can tell you that all fits into this. But Albert Pike admits, and it could be in Morals and Dogma, I'll have to check the book, that they openly admit that their religion is Luciferian.
Hmm.
Make no mistake about that. So he openly admits that, and I'll get the quote the exact quote and the page and the book, you know, for that. But I know he does admit that. So, you know, we've seen so far the lotus flowers, you know, the druid rituals revived, checkerboard floors, black and white, the black, white, and red colors, of course, all during the funeral. Always a star in the background. You'll always see a star in the background. I don't care what it is. You know, the handshake we were watching with the thumb on top, near to the knuckle, that's Masonic.
Right.
The breaking of the wand, you know, the unicorn, you know, all these things are in plain sight. They're hidden in plain sight. These are things that they do, and most people don't think about it. But they're sending messages. They're saying, this is who I am. This is what I represent. And a lot of people, you know, would just watch that and not see a thing. Amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because, I mean, I wasn't watching the news, and I wasn't interested in anything that had to do with that ceremony. So I missed the whole wand thing. But even if they had done it, what would I have known? Nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That's just another mindless
thing. Well, you might have wondered. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, yeah. But, you know, it's, since it's a secret society, like he was saying, everything is a secret.
Yes, exactly.
Right? So, you know, they don't want you to know what they're doing, but they have to do it because it's part of the ritual.
Yes. Well, we like to reveal that stuff, don't we? We like to tell their secret.
Absolutely.
Okay, our next audio is from Mark, and it's Know Your Enemy, Part 58. We're going to look at the Rothschilds because, you know, the Rothschild era, 19th century timeline. And, you know, in this, they're going to be introducing the Rothschilds. Their influence is everywhere today, and they're easy to spot if you understand what you're looking for, okay? They're in our news media, especially in our news media. So we're going to let Mark introduce it, and then we're going to go on from there, you know?
Right. All right.
We'll see some of, you know, how you can spot the Rothschild. He's just going to introduce him. I'll tell you how you can spot him next.
Okay.
Okay.
So in our timeline in 1791, Meyer Rothschild had been given a charter to establish the First Bank of America. By 1811, this charter had expired and Congress voted against its renewal. Nathan Rothschild was not impressed and threatened. Either the application for the renewal of the charter is granted or the United States will find itself involved in a most disastrous war. The United States stood firm, leading Nathan Rothschild to issue another threat that he would teach those impudent Americans a lesson. In 1812, therefore, backed by the money and wishes of Nathan, Britain declared war on the United States. The Rothschild plan was not to win the war for Britain, but simply to cause the USA to build up such a debt in fighting the war that they would have to allow the Rothschild Bank Charter to be renewed. This plan succeeded. In 1816, the Second Bank of the United States was established and given another 20-year charter. Thousands of British and American soldiers had died, but the Rothschilds got their bank. Around this time, the great patriarch of the family, Meyer Rothschild, died, leaving specific written demands for all those who would follow him. All the key positions in the Rothschild business interest were to be held by male family members only. The family was to intermarry with first and second cousins only as well. Many of these were arranged marriages. As well as preserving the purity of the bloodline, this would ensure that the family fortune would stay within their control. Consequently, of the 18 marriages by Meyer's children, 16 were with first cousins. Also, no public inventory of his estate was ever to be published. People were never to know just how wealthy and just how far-reaching their influence was becoming. The British war in America had proven very profitable, and so the Rothschilds repeated the trick by manipulating the Napoleonic Wars for their own ends. Nathan funded the Duke of Wellington through the Bank of England, while his brother James, who had been sent to Paris to start a central bank there, used their money to fund Napoleon. This war again generated massive risk-free debt for the Rothschilds. During the war, they also saw an opportunity to set up an unrivaled postal and courier service, who were to be allowed through both French and English blockades. It was these couriers who kept Nathan up to date with events so that he could use that intelligence to manipulate the stock exchange. So good were these couriers that the news from the Battle of Waterloo was delivered to Nathan Rothschild a full 24 hours before Wellington's own courier. Being a day ahead of the curve, Nathan played a clever trick. At that time, British bonds were called consols, and upon hearing Britain had won the war, Nathan began selling all his consols. This made the other traders believe the British had lost the war, and in a frantic panic, they started selling too. The effect of this was that the consols plummeted in value. Nathan then discreetly told all his workers to start buying up the consols they could lay their hands on. When news came through that the British had in fact won the war the next day, the value of the consols skyrocketed, giving Nathan a 20-to-1 return on his investment. Feeling rather pleased with himself at this stage, Nathan made this famous statement: "I care not what puppet is placed on the throne of England to rule the empire in which the sun never sets. The man who controls Britain's money supply controls the British Empire, and I control the British money supply." He went on to brag that in the 17 years he had been in England, he had turned the £20,000 given to him by his father into £50 million, which is a huge sum by today's standards, let alone theirs. So powerful were the Rothschilds at this juncture that they used their control of the Bank of England to change the whole monetary system. Instead of shipping gold from country to country to pay for goods and services, which was costly and risky, they simply held the gold in their secure banks across the world and instead issued paper debits and credits. Now people only had to hand over a piece of official paper, which was backed by the gold held in secure locations. This is the origin of paper money that we have today. The past century had clearly been very profitable for the family. In fact, it became known as the Age of the Rothschilds, and it was by this point that some estimated them to own over half the world's wealth. These wars were also achieving gradual synthesis by the Hegelian principle. In 1814, the Congress of Vienna was called to settle the issues arising from the Napoleonic Wars, Vienna being the place where Salomon Rothschild had been posted. So out of the war of two sides, an attempt at synthesis was made. This became a model for the League of Nations and the United Nations, which would follow a century later after World Wars I and II respectively. The Vienna Congress was intended to create a blueprint for how a world government might be achieved. As many of the European countries were now in massive debt to the Rothschilds' bank because of these wars, they could use this as a bargaining tool. However, the Congress of Vienna was scuppered by Tsar Alexander in Russia, who did not yet have a central Rothschild-owned bank. Enraged by this, Nathan Rothschild swore to exact revenge on the Tsar's descendants. In 1817, the French took out massive loans to rebuild the country after the war. Rothschild agents then bought up vast amounts of French government bonds, causing their value to increase. On November the 5th, 1818, they dumped them all in the open market, causing their values to plummet and France to go into a financial panic. The Rothschild then stepped in to take control of the French money supply. In 1821, Calvin Rothschild was sent to Italy to do business with the Vatican and the Pope. By 1823, they had taken over the financial operations of the Catholic Church worldwide. In 1827, Sir Walter Scott published his works on the life of Napoleon. In volume 2 of the 9-volume set, he confirmed the French Revolution was planned by the Illuminati and that it was financed by the money changers of Europe, that being the Rothschilds. In 1832 in America, President Andrew Jackson ran the campaign for his second term in office under the slogan, "Jackson and No Bank." This was in reference to his desire to take control of the American money system away from the Rothschild central bank and instead create a financial system that benefited the people. A year later, he stayed true to his word and started removing all deposits from their banks. This caused the Rothschild to panic and they contracted the money supply, causing a depression. Jackson knew what was going on and echoed Jesus' words when he declared, "You are a den of thieves and vipers, and I intend to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out." On January 30th, 1835, a hired assassin tried to shoot President Jackson, but miraculously both his pistols misfired. President Jackson later claimed he knew the Rothschilds were behind the assassination attempt. The assassin himself, Richard Lawrence, later bragged that powerful people in Europe had hired him and promised to protect him if caught. Lawrence was indeed found not guilty by reason of insanity and escaped punishment. In 1836, Jackson finally succeeded in throwing the Rothschild Central Bank out of America when the charter was not renewed. In 1841, President John Tyler vetoed an attempt to reinstate the charter for the Bank of the United States. Following this act, he was sent hundreds of assassination threats. Benjamin Disraeli, future British Prime Minister, described Nathan Rothschild at this time as the lord and master of the money markets of the world and, of course, virtually lord and master of everything else. He literally held the revenues of southern Italy in pawn, and monarchs and ministers of all countries courted his advice and were guided by his suggestions. Disraeli also referenced these infamous occultists when he said, "The world is run by people very different to those that most people are aware of." In 1845, President Jackson died, but before his death he was asked what his greatest achievement was. His reply, "I killed the bank."
Yeah, this is why I believe they hate Donald Trump so much.
Mm-hmm.
And not because Donald Trump doesn't use the bank, because he does. I mean, Donald Trump is using the same monetary system as everybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the last thing standing in the way of the Rothschilds of, you know, controlling everything is the U.S. Once they get the U.S. to fall, which
mm-hmm.
has always been their design, then
exactly.
they take over.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they have been created the U.S. to fall. I mean, I can go back, like I said, I studied yesterday from 1817. I was studying yesterday, and this was all designed to eventually fall if they got into power, okay?
Right.
And that's what we're seeing right now. You know, we're not called the New World. You know, by accident,
yeah, yeah.
because it
yeah.
was designed in back then, even and before then, we can go back to the 1400s. This system that we're in now was set up so eventually they would take over. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And what's happening now? We see what's happening now. Again, we have another Jewish heritage with the Rothschilds. You know?
Correct. Correct.
And this is our banking system where you see a war, and I went through all the wars. If you look at the different wars, they're behind it. Right?
Sure.
And why are they behind
sure.
it? He just explained it. It's money. It's
right.
money.
Sure.
So why were we a superpower?
Right.
Why were we built up as a superpower? I mean, at the end of the day, so we could, you know, be involved in all these wars, and what does it end up? What happens? That fills their bank account. Is that terrible?
Well,
I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah, 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 yeah. People are killing each other on both sides, and they're getting rich.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly. Yep.
So...
that's exactly it. And their influences today, and we're going to show how you can spot yourself. And that goes back, you know, I want you to think about, I'm not sure if he gets into this, and I think he does on this, the coat of arms. The coat of arms is extremely important in Europe. And a lot of times when you look at it, you know, you think, well, you know, I'm not sure where they came up with that design. And
right,
what
right,
means,
right.
But that's all signaling too. You know, it has a lot in it. It has plans in it. It has the past in it. It has who they are in it. You know, it exposes
yep.
them. But also flags do. And
right.
You wouldn't think so. I mean, I watched this boring flag guy for I don't know how long. I thought, I can't play that. He's too boring. But he explains the information he had. It was a TED Talk. And that's all this guy did was study flags. He was so boring.
Right.
But what he said was brilliant. You know, he explained the different flags and what they meant, you know, the meaning behind the flag. So colors are relevant in these secret societies, along with,
mm-hmm.
you know, hand signals, along with different rituals. It's all, they do all this, you know, for a reason. And we take it as every day. You know, I mean, we just look at things, people look at things, and they really don't think anything of it. But we're surrounded by symbolism here in America, and the world is. And people have
right.
no idea what it means. So we're going to go back to, I think it's Hugo here, the Rothschilds, yellow and blue.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good exercise this week. Not only are you looking for the, you know, the black and white floors. I mean, even in modern
mm-hmm.
movies, you'll see that. You know, you're always looking for that some star. There's a star in the background. You look for that. But you also look at colors. And there's yellow and blue, or it can be called golden blue.
Right.
That, you will see many news agencies now using that color in their background. That is the Rothschilds. And during the funeral, when they put their military, the Queen's funeral, when they had their military outfit on, if you noticed, it was blue and gold. Okay?
Amazing.
When the military one was blue and gold. And that is the Rothschild color. And it's in their coat of arms, and he'll explain why. So you'll be able to spot who's behind it. In the media source, I threw in a media one in the end to give you the exact colors or show you. But it happens to be the color. If you want to know what the color is, look at the Ukrainian flag.
Mm-hmm.
That is the color. So you
okay.
wonder why there's a war going on? Put two and two together.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, well, I still have 3 minutes on this video, so let me complete
okay.
this. Yeah.
I thought he was done. I'm sorry.
In 1846, Meyer Rothschild's wife said nonchalantly from her deathbed that, "If my sons did not want wars, there would be none." In 1850, James Rothschild of France was said to be worth 600 million francs, 150 million francs more than all the other bankers of France put together. In 1861, Abraham Lincoln, 16th President of the United States, began printing his own debt-free money and informed the public it was legal tender for all private and public debts. By the following year, close to $450 million had been printed and distributed. Lincoln would say of this that, "We gave the people of this republic the greatest blessing they ever had, their own paper money to pay all debt costs." That same year, the Times of London said, "If that mischievous financial policy which had its origin in the North American Republic should become indurated down to a fixture, then that government will furnish its own money without cost. It will pay off debts and be without a debt. It will have all the money necessary to carry on its commerce. It will become prosperous beyond precedent in the history of the civilized governments of the world. The brains and the wealth of all countries will go to North America. That government must be destroyed, or it will destroy every monarchy on the globe." In 1865, Lincoln highlighted the danger of the money man, saying, "I have two great enemies, the Southern Army in front of me and the financial institutions in my rear. Of the two, the one in my rear is the greatest." Later that year, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. Following a brief period of training in the Rothschild London Bank, a man called Jacob Schiff, a Rothschild born in their house in Frankfurt, was sent to the United States with the task to regain control of the United States through a central bank. He was to find desirable men and promote them to high places in federal government. In 1875, Jacob Schiff took control of the major banking house, Kuhn Lubin Co., and formed associations with the other major bankers in the United States. In 1881, American President Garfield hinted at the way the Rothschild manipulated the money market, saying, "Whoever controls the volume of money in our country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. And when you realize the entire system is very easily controlled, one way or another, by a few powerful men at the top, you will not have to be told how periods of inflation and depression originate." In 1891, the British Labour leader made these statements regarding the Rothschilds. "This blood-sucking crew has been the cause of untold mischief and misery in Europe during the present century, and has piled up its prodigious wealth chiefly through fermenting wars between states which ought never to have quarrelled. Whenever there is trouble in Europe, wherever rumours of war circulate and men's minds are distraught with fear of change and calamity, you may be sure that a hook-nosed Rothschild is at his game somewhere near the region of the disturbance." Comments like these worried the Rothschilds, and towards the end of the century they bought the Reuters news agency to gain some control of the media, that is, the information flows. Reuters became a central...
Did we lose you? I'm not sure what's going on right now, but that cut off real quick. We'll see if he comes back. It still shows that we're on, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully you can hear me. And he has the audio, so we'll see what's going on. He may have had a power outage in the middle of it. Oh, maybe it's the rat. Maybe the rat, you know, or the mouse ate the wire to top things off. We'll see what happened, but it could be a power outage because on this end, you know, I'm still waiting for him to respond. But it went dead, so that could be it. We'll give him a few minutes. It almost sounded like we had something on the other end, so I'm not sure. Let me mute and check something.
Can you hear me? Hello? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you. I can hear you.
I don't know what happened. I hear you talking.
I thought we had a power.
Yeah.
I thought the mouse got the wire.
Okay, we're back on. What the heck happened there? What the?
I thought you, the mouse ate the wire and that was it. But I'm talking way, and then I got two texts saying, "I can hear you." I said, "I don't know if you had a power outage or what happened."
I know what the deal is. The internet. There's no internet.
Oh.
Yeah, hold on. I want to see now what I could do here. Hold on. Yeah, there's no internet. The internet went off.
Okay. Would you like me to play one of them on my end?
Yes, play play number four The internet.
Okay, I will. Okay, hold on. I'll get on number four. And I'll probably get all the commercials because, hang on. Okay.
Wait,
this is
I'm
Hugo.
Back on. Wait,
and
hold on. I got it. We got internet back. Hold on. All right. Let's see if I can get it now.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
All right.
Hello, you're listening to Hugo Talks. Now, you may remember a couple of weeks ago I put out a video called Mass Formation Color Mind Programming, or something like that, where I showed numerous examples where the use of the color scheme blue and yellow was used throughout the last 2 years in relation to lockdowns, jib jabs, NHS, all that stuff, in adverts on the telly, adverts in newspapers and articles and photographs, all of that stuff.
Absolutely tons of it. And then a month or so ago, the whole pandemic, plandemic, jib-jab propaganda suddenly stopped. And all of a sudden, as if someone flicked a switch, governments around the world suddenly said, oh, we're just going to stop all the restrictions. You don't need to do it anymore. You can stop masks. Like all of a sudden, and this coincided with the Ukraine-Russia thing starting. And then the fake stream media, they started to push and bombard everybody with propaganda from that. So they swapped one propaganda crisis with a new one, a very quick and smooth transfer. But the colors remain the same blue and yellow. And in that video, I suggested, is there some form of color programming going on? Well, this led me to look into other things. For example, the Channel 4 show, Utopia, which used yellow and blue throughout, a show where the story was all about viruses, vaccines, and government plots to depopulate the world because of climate change. And then also the Freemasons, very fond of that yellow and blue combination, especially on their logo and tashes they wear, as you can see here. I also looked into the Rothschild family. Now, here we see a photo of one of their castles, which was lit up in blue and yellow the other day, in support of Ukraine, okay? Now, when it comes to people talking about families, bloodlines, banking dynasties that control the world with the power of their massive wealth, well, this family is the one that gets mentioned the most. Some people say they own nearly all of the central banks of the world. The fake stream media say, no, that's not true. They will say, well, they used to have lots of control in the past, but that's not the case anymore now. Well, I don't know so much. It seems to me that the super, super rich don't usually tend to lose money. They just get richer and consolidate their wealth over time. That's the way it seems to go. It's more likely they just hide their incredible wealth. Look at this from 2017. Ukraine picks Rothschild as advisor, hopes for debt swap. And here we see Ukraine working with Rothschild on funding strategy, Eurobond banks mandated. So they are clearly still working with countries and their finances. But the main point of this video is how they use this color scheme. So like I was saying, here is this castle of theirs lit up in blue and yellow for Ukraine. But this is not unusual as these are their colors they use all the time. The colors blue and yellow run throughout everything that they do. For a starter, here is their coat of arms, which is predominantly yellow and blue. Here is their logo, which turns up on most of their banking, financial company, investment companies, and so forth. Here is their coat of arms on one of their, of the gates up to one of their properties, of course, using those two colors. They're big into horse racing, and their riders always wear blue and yellow, as is their colors, as can be seen here by these designs. And this goes way back, as can be seen on this old cigarette card. They founded a football team in Austria. Story goes that the gardeners of the Rothschild estate were kicking a ball around in the garden while they were on a break, and it was messing up the flowers. So they bought some land nearby, the Rothschilds, for them to play on. And this eventually became First Vienna, the Austrian football club, which of course have their colors yellow and blue, as you can see here. It's Austria's oldest football team. It's nearly 130 years old. They were using this color scheme back then. There are members of the family that have boats and yachts and go into sailing competitions under the Rothschild name, and they use that color scheme here in the design of their boats to signify the family name. It's their color trademark. There is a street in Tel Aviv named after them called Rothschild Boulevard, which has a number of sculptures in it. This one, I don't know what it's supposed to be. It looks like a big climbing frame, but of course it has to be yellow and blue. Also in the street, there is a bull statue and a statue of a man. Both of these statues are, of course, in that color scheme. Also on Rothschild Boulevard in Tel Aviv, there is a hotel which is called Rothschild Hotel. And as you can see, they are fond of using blue and yellow lighting, and their chairs also have that same color scheme. There is a bird named after the Rothschilds called the Miner. Here it is. It's white, but it has two other colours that stick out, yellow beak and blue round the eye. This colour scheme can be found on their perfume, as on this bottle, on this sign to one of their vineyards, the Rothschild Chateau. Got the logo of sorts on the left-hand side. We've got wine bottle designs. It's on books. This colour match-up, this particular book, is a strategy investment planner from Edmund de Rothschild. And as we can see here, this is a financial institution. We see two flags in this photo, both yellow and blue. Here is the Edmund de Rothschild Foundation. Again, blue, yellow logo. Here is a Rothschild and Co. annual report. Again, the same two colours. This is a constant thing you will see throughout their investment companies, this colour scheme. Here it is on their bottles of champagne. On the logo, the same colour scheme. This is an architect company, Dixon Rothschild, and here is the managing director, okay, and he's sitting on a yellow chair with a blue jumper on behind a painting that is yellow and blue, okay? Here's another one, Erinda Rothschild Foundation website. Again, we see the same colour scheme, and I could go on. There's still more here. I haven't gone into the clothes and other stuff, but it's very clear that the two colours are used by the Rothschild family for well over 100 years, and they have used these colours wherever they have interacted with the world, wherever they have a business or a venture of some kind. They use these two colours to signify where they've been. It's like a calling card, you know? I just thought it was weird that we have been seeing this colour throughout the last 2 years, and like I said earlier, the media, the fake stream media, jumped from bombarding us without jib-jab lockdown crises and straight into the Ukraine-Russia crisis, and they never needed to change the colour scheme. Both so-called crises where the media are asking and telling people to do things like taking refugees or get the jab or lose your job, constantly trying to coerce people into doing stuff that they don't want to do. These so-called crises have created financial repercussions that look about to be bringing about a collapse of the nation's economies. And when we go back in history and people talk about families and super rich families that have funded like both sides of the war and whatever, the name Rothschild comes up, doesn't it? A lot. And it just so happens that they use the same colour scheme, that same colour scheme that I made a video about 2 weeks ago. And I just thought it was, strange.
Yeah, again, think about it. They control everything.
Mm-hmm.
And blue is the color of royalty, and
mm-hmm.
gold is the color of the highest asset. You know, when you look throughout the
That's
world,
right.
I mean, nothing. So blue and gold, they ruled the gold.
Yes.
They ruled the gold. Now, I'm not saying that that's what the colors mean. I'm just, that's
no,
my
but
little.
It's
my little
yeah.
interpretation.
Yeah.
Yes. And so that's a weird group there, the Rothschilds.
And they're everywhere. I started to
yeah.
notice those two colors about the time, like the same time when he was talking about the pandemic. All
right.
of a sudden, the news shows everywhere. You know, this color was popping up, the same color.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know if we're done with this one, but on my next,
yeah, we're
I only
done.
Have
yeah.
a short.
This one, we're done
on
with.
Our, okay. It's only a short video, but I want to show you something. I picked a town that had, they just celebrated their 100th year or something of Shriners, you know, in the community. And they also have a huge Masonic temple in town. So I thought, okay, I'll look. And, as things happen, it was right because they're voting on a new flag design in their town. They all of a sudden they need and this is Johnson City, Tennessee, the commission to vote on a new flag design. Now, this is, you know, a very old, old, old town. But that it has those two elements in it, you know. It has a lot going on there right now. But I want you to just look at the colors and what they say about this new flag. It's only a short audio. That's audio number 5.
Hold on. I'm still having some technical difficulty here. Hold on. This internet
okay.
is going in and out. Okay, here it is.
Well, tomorrow night, Johnson City leaders have a very unusual decision to make. They have to decide whether to keep or ditch the city flag, which city staff says is virtually unknown to most people who live in the city and therefore rarely used it. Here it is. It's been around since 1964. And here's the updated version that commissioners are going to vote on tomorrow. City staff said this combines elements that derive meaning from Johnson City's past, present, and future. They say the green line symbolized the rails for the railroad that led to the city's founding. Yellow, we're told, symbolizes the path to the future. Both together form a mountain. Mountains on the city's logo and seal. And then there are the three stars, a nod to the Tennessee state flag, which, by the way, was designed by a Johnson City native. City commissioners meeting tomorrow at 6.
Well, that's ugly.
Yes, it's not green. It's blue, the turquoise color. But
yeah.
Here's the thing. It has the stars on it they're voting on. When I listened to the flag guy, he said the yellow
right.
represents, he was showing different flags. He said
okay.
that yellow strip in the middle is for the future, showing the yellow brick road.
Mm.
Now, wasn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
That's the yellow brick road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
sure.
He talks about the you know, the stars having different meaning. We know that's usually, you know, you see a lot of Masonic with that. You also see that in Shriners on their hat. You know?
Really?
The star and the moon. Oh, yeah.
Okay, okay.
It's
okay.
The Shriners use that on their hat because it's the sign of Islam. You see?
That's weird. That's weird.
It is weird, yes. So it goes back. I mean, I could go back and back in history and talk about that, but we can't. But that whole design there, it's all symbolism. This is all symbolism. So this flag guy was excellent. Boring, but excellent. I mean, who wants to listen about flags? But I did because he
right,
was an
right.
expert in flags. That's what he does. And he said, when you see that yellow strip, that means the yellow brick road.
Wow.
The future.
Wow.
So he talked about
yeah.
the city, you know, changing. But if you notice the color, then you go back to the Ukraine and you look at the color of their flag, which was changed, by the way, too.
Right.
Whose color is that flag?
Rothschild.
That's Rothschild.
Yeah,
who
yeah.
always backs the war? Rothschild.
Right. Yep.
Both sides.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So who's in charge?
Well, yeah,
or
because think about
in charge?
It. Think about it. We're supporting the war in Ukraine, so is NATO. Well, what is that doing to the money supply here in the United States and for NATO? Don't their people need the money for the fuel this winter?
Mm-hmm.
So when you just look at it, it's like they're the puppet masters.
Exactly.
And
that's
and
a
then,
good term for that.
And then we the peons are given what little money we have because what choice do we have? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
What I mean, you got to put oil in your fuel tank to heat your house. You got to put gas
right.
in your car. So they're going to get you. You got to buy groceries, right?
Correct.
So they're getting you every which way they can, and then you're supporting the war.
Yep.
I mean, how many more wars can we fund and not go bankrupt?
Well, that's what
so,
we do here, isn't it? As a superpower, we were. Support
yeah.
wars. I mean, we, you know, it's one of the things that we do. We say, why are we involved in that? Like
right.
Vietnam, you know, Why do we get involved in these wars? You know, it's not that the people wanted it. It's a matter of, you know, there's all a control. Like you said, the puppet masters decide. What does that do to our economy? Where does that money go? Follow the money trail, always. That is the yellow brick road, the money trail. It's the gold brick road there leading to them. You know, it is amazing when you put this all together, all these different things. And that Ukrainian president, now I've seen him everywhere. I've seen him at rock concerts. I've seen him, you know, dancing in heels. I've seen him show up on billboards. I've seen him on big screens, you know, at different events.
Right, right.
That's bothered me about him. And then to have their flag that was changed now with the Rothschild colors.
Colors. Yeah.
You have to ask, you know, you have to think, well, why is that? You know, who's backing this guy? Because
basically
he was what, a comedian? Was he a comedian?
I think he was a comedian on a comedic soap opera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you see showing up at Burning Man, or the England equivalent to that, on these big screen TVs, you know, promoting this and that. He's just kind of showing up everywhere. And, you know, that bothered me. And then this, to put this on top of it, with the backing of the Rothschilds, you know, or the colors, and then the war, and the money, you put this all together, and you can actually map out and see exactly who's behind what's going on. And the NHS over there, yes, that is their colors. That's the colors they change to. I can look at any internet, just about any internet news, and that would be the color behind it, you know?
Yeah,
So the media, we know from Mark that they control the media. You know, what it was Reuters they bought, and how many other agencies do they own? Which controls the narrative, doesn't it?
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, this is amazing stuff.
Sure.
When you look at it.
Now, I have a question.
So anyway, Okay.
Yeah, I have a question. You sent me something which I have not had time to look at. And T.D. Jakes, Stephen Furtick's mentor, joined Scientologists for Prosperity Conference. Can you shed some light on that?
I haven't gone through the whole thing, but I thought you'd be interested. It's just a matter of Scientology, gathering with people in Scientology to do a conference for prosperity. So think about it.
Let me read
the whole group.
Of,
there's a bunch of people. Yeah, go ahead and read it.
Yeah, it says here, the prosperity gospel is far more nefarious than just believing that God will grant you wealth and health if you have enough faith. The prosperity gospel is a wholly paganized counterfeit Christianity that is steeped in the idolatry of self and greed. With that comes the notion that even the scriptures themselves are about you. They are not. They are about God. And the characters in the scriptures are there to glorify God. Stephen Furtick, a world-class false prophet based out of Elevation Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, says that his family loves prosperity huckster, anti-Trinitarian false prophet T.D. Jakes so much that his kids think he wrote parts of the Bible. Okay. So, okay. The worst of these self-idolizing, narcissistic prosperity preachers are Stephen Furtick. Both of them have embraced an anti-Trinitarian heresy called modalism. All right. Let's see if I can get down. Okay. All right. Let's keep moving down. This is why T.D. Jakes sees no problem with teaming up with a Cult of Scientology member, Grant Cardone, for a mega money prosperity gospel conference. In fact, Jakes will be joining an entire host of pagans to blaspheme the true and living God while worshiping the God of Mammon at the Path to Prosperity Conference in Hollywood, Florida this week. According to his own bio on his website, Grant Cardone, Scientologist, is a Miami-based Scientologist, entrepreneur, business owner, New York Times bestselling author, and noted philanthropist who currently serves as CEO at several privately held companies, including Cardone Capital, Cardone Enterprises, Cardone Training Technologies, and Cardone University. In fact, his bio goes on to make sure that the readers know that Cardone is a Scientologist by pointing this out 21 times. Scientology is essentially a spiritualized form of Freudian pop psychology that teaches that life is what you make it out to be. It focuses on understanding and teaching people how to make rational and pleasurable decisions for life. Okay, so basically he's teaming up. In other words, he'll prostitute himself and do whatever is necessary to make another buck.
Correct.
That's basically, that's okay. So he's,
do you remember the time when they used to hide this stuff? That's over.
That
you know who they were affiliated
over.
With.
That is that is indeed over. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff when you come
to think
about it. I mean, what won't T.D. Jakes do is the question now. What won't he do? Right? I mean,
yeah.
What
didn't he turn his ministry over to his daughter or something I read?
Yeah, he turned his ministry over to his daughter. And, of course, she's a heretic in her own right.
Right.
And
so now he can travel and do conferences, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
with other heretics.
Yeah, you know, T.D. Jakes is just... if you didn't know he was a heretic from the beginning and you're just coming to that conclusion now, you're clueless because from the moment he arrived on the scene, you know, he was bad news. He was bad news. So,
exactly.
Look, they're going to be in bed with everybody. Everybody's going to be in bed with everybody. It's
correct.
You know, it's the end times. It's just, it is what it is. You know, it's just, nothing should surprise us. Nothing.
No, not at all.
Nothing should
not
surprise
at all.
Us. So,
I mean, you know, when I saw the gay movement make their advance, there was nothing clearer to me of the season we were in when they showed up at, you know, the libraries, when they showed up at schools, when they show up at, then show up at churches. I thought, you know.
That's it.
That
all
was
over.
A, you know.
Game over.
Yeah. Yep.
Game over. You know.
Yep.
So it's amazing. It's amazing to see how the world is falling apart. Mm-hmm. The world is, and what are pastors doing? You know, doing prosperity conferences in the midst of an inflation crisis.
Yes. That's the part. That's exactly the part I thought of when he said that.
I mean, the news today reported that we have the highest inflation today. The report is out today. And what they call core inflation. Core inflation is inflation on items that family need to survive.
Correct.
It's not like, for example, you and your husband, you don't need to go to the movies. That you go to the movies
if you want to, but there's no need. There's no now. You do need your medicines. That's a core
mm-hmm.
item.
Yeah.
You do need
yep.
food. You do need gas to get to work. Okay.
Going
bowling is not a core necessity. But there are
right.
some core things. So when it comes to the core things that you need, that's where the inflation is hitting the hardest. And you're having a
mm-hmm.
prosperity conference?
Right.
When people are broke?
Right. Yeah, and, you know.
They'll pull it off.
Yes, they will. Yeah. Because the people think, okay, this is my way of getting money. That's the mindset in that
right.
group, you know. They're
yeah.
going to think,
well, like,
okay,
yeah.
maybe if
yeah.
I give more, God would give me more, you know, and
yeah.
then I'll
mm-hmm.
get out of this situation. That's, you know, that's where they get these people, and it's really sad that
sure.
it happens that way. But, you know, what can I say?
Yep, yep.
You know, you just got to
well,
get out
show.
And run. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You got to get out, walk through the woods, get some fresh air, get out of these churches, you
yes.
know, say hi to the squirrels and the raccoons, and, you know,
the
just get out and get...
I saw a moose.
Get out and get, yeah, beautiful.
I saw a real moose.
Majestic animal.
I chased it down. I chased it
wow.
down with my dad. Well, it was... You know, it was running and it was beside the road, and it's like, stop the car, I got to go. And people were stopping their cars, and I went running down to catch the moose. I wanted to see him
wow.
trot through the water. Yeah, amazing.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
They are. They're huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Anyway.
Well, great show. Great show.
Thank you.
And you have the last word.
Well, you have something on tonight, don't you? What are we talking about tonight in your show?
Yeah, we're talking about Psalm 34:7, where the angel of the Lord encampeth around those that fear him. And that is for Pastor Brenda. That's not Pastors on Wheels. So
right.
Yeah, the angel
well,
of
fantastic.
Yeah, Psalm 34:7. Yeah, so we're gonna break that down and give people hope. Jesus is on their side.
I never leave on a trip without saying that, without asking
mm-hmm.
the Lord to encamp about us in safety.
Right.
You know? So.
Absolutely.
And he's always been there. So, well, thank you for that, and I'll be listening
Amen.
Tonight. And have a great week, everybody. And, you know, look for blue and gold, blue and yellow. You know, look around a little bit.
It.
You'll
yep.
see these things. Yep, you surely will. Okay, we'll see you next week. Have a great day. Bye.
Oh, Lord, you have searched me. And you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all of my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, Lord. You know it completely. You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. And such knowledge, Lord, is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. And your right hand will hold me fast. If I say surely the darkness will hide me, and the light become like nights all around me. Oh Lord, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, the darkness is as light to you. Created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. Oh, and I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, I know that for well. If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. And my faith would not hinder from you, Lord. Grains of the sand. When I wake